This is the All Revved Up Podcast, and I'm Reverend Emmett Price.
And I'm Reverend Irene Monroe.
Before we head into a conversation on Black parenting, the joys and challenges, let's take a moment to thank each and every one of our listeners. Thank you for your support, your encouragement, your feedback, and your comments. We are so grateful.
And as always, a tsunami of thanks I give to you and also to our wonderful producers, Kyla Wright and Cavante Small.
Indeed so. We have phenomenal producers. Now, Irene, parenting is tough.
Amen.
Woo. With the growing influence of social media and the increasing occurrences of unjust treatment of Black people, in addition to other people of color and members of the LGBTQ community, parenting Black children is hard.
Amen.
In this season of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and the many hashtags, we need to talk about the intersectional ancestral ethos of the joys and challenges of Black parenting, past and present. Now, Irene, does it still take a village?
And do we
still have a village to raise Black children?
And that's what we're going to tackle when we talk about the joys and challenges of raising our children. Absolutely here.
I mean, so what are the joys?
Well, let me just say this here. The joys for me is not only molding minds, but shaping souls, nurturing our children into becoming adults. What happens is what the media doesn't pick up how we show joy having our children and raising our children. So I'm going to give you an example. All right. I would say, my baby, Kyla, she's one of our producers. This is how mama would say it. You know, that girl can write. Ooh, I can't wait to see what she going to be when she get grown up. And then I would say, you know, that boy, Cavante. And that's one of our producers. You know, he's always been nosy. So I think he's going to be a good news guy. And then I would say, and Emmett, honey, that child, okay. He's a musical prodigy. You know, he was banging on pots. Now I'm talking about Reverend Price's son. Okay. I would say, you know, that boy was banging on pots and pans when he was just 3 years old. And you know what? I heard a little Tito Puente in that. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. So people don't understand. And when our children graduate, this is how that would look. Now, this is about the Reverend Dr. Emmett Price. My baby not only graduated from college, but he getting a PhD. And this how this looks. When you walk across the stage, you know that's your child. Everybody know that's your child because this is how we do it. That's my baby. Yes, sir, that's my baby. So that's the thing that does not get captured. And when it does, it's demonized that we're making so much noise, not understanding that educational parity was never afforded to us, and not understanding how we raised our children, okay, in the midst of this cauldron of racism. And the one thing that we understand, they bring an extra joy raising them because, sadly, we're not promised tomorrow with them. So every day with our children is a gift. Come on now.
I mean, you took me back, you know, to thinking about the various graduations that I've had and certainly my siblings, but also my children. The graduations have always been a big thing, right? I mean, birthdays have always been a big thing. And the celebration of life on the Black side of town has always been a hyper interactive thing. You know, you graduate from let's just say from elementary school, and you don't just have immediate family there. You got neighbors,
you got
folk from out of town, you know, and it's almost like your elementary school graduation would have been the equivalent of your high school or your collegiate graduation. I mean, we make a big to do because of the harshness of life and because we want to wrap our young people with a sense of community that you are not the only one who this is for, that you are representative of those who have been praying for you, those who have been supporting and encouraging you.
That's right.
And this is a celebration
You left out another one. And those that have been disciplining you.
Parents and
the village.
Parents
and the village here. And the thing that people don't understand, Emmett, our children bring us joy. We're the most important person in their lives.
Yeah.
And we hope for them. This is why I'm so proud of each and every one of you, because I'm old enough to be your mama, Emmett. Okay. and Cavante, your grandmama. And then Kyla, your great, great grandmama. So,
oh,
you know,
Lord.
I am just excited because you folks have excelled much further than I was able to coming up. And you take it, listen, and what we do, we pass the baton and you guys have taken it so much further than I have and could. And we still haven't gotten where we want to, but the race keeps going.
The joy of parenting, particularly in the Black community, is that we approach parenting from the position of trying to set our young people up to surpass us.
Mm-hmm.
We hand them the baton and the instruction manual and all of the notes from our journals so that they can understand that where they're headed is not, you know, la la land. It's going to be difficult terrain with obstacles and all kinds of things that they need to deal with. But we want them to excel and exceed.
That's right.
We want them to surpass.
That's
and
right.
Be better.
That's right.
Than even
and
we are.
And we have an ancestral, not only village, but a canon. Okay.
Yeah.
Volumes of knowledge each decade. And
yeah.
So the interesting thing now with George Floyd and Breonna, okay, we go back to that canon of the civil rights movement,
mm-hmm.
all right? So we know where to get the information, and we know how to protect them in the face of constant harassment from K to 12 and beyond. So my point is that I'm so excited that we're talking about that because it gives me a chance to say to each and every one of you just how proud I am of you folks. You
well,
know, if I do nothing else, all I have to say is that, you see, because when we talk about children, see, all of y'all are my children. That's why, you know, you better be giving me some reverence. Okay. That's why when I talk, y'all all shut up. Okay.
Look here, Mama Irene, we proud of you too. We and I'm glad that you asked for our reverence and not our reparations. Cause I, you know, we didn't know you was gonna come on here and hold rank and put us in our place, but I appreciate
I'm the elder.
But
that's part of it. That's the part of it. Without having to tell you that
yes.
I am the elder, and it's the reverence that you all, each and every one of you, give me, even when I'm wrong, which is seldom.
Oh Lord, this is getting good. There's something so precious about the Black community, and particularly around raising young Black children, because there is this sense of reverence to the elders and to the ancestors and to those who have come before. And we literally teach our children that they're standing on the shoulders of those who are around them. And so whether they're aunts and uncles, whether they're grandparents and you know, godparents or whatnot, that we teach our young people about a community.
That's right. And what we do here is that we really turn the sort of the American ethos of pulling oneself up by their bootstraps. Well, we understand that it takes a village here. We understand we have no bootstraps here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we stand on the shoulders of each other. And that's why when we do libations, when we do a ceremony, we give libations. And what we have to understand about the village is here. The village is still here, but again, it has that kind of malleability and adaptability that again, if you are out of place, Emmett, and you misbehave, this is how the village operate. The bad news reaches your home before you get home, okay? And if Miss Kyla should sass me, okay, I have to put her in her place before she get home, so when she get home, she get another discipline about that. And should Cavante keep talking and have, you know, let something out of the bag that shouldn't have, okay, I don't have to give him a slap in the mouth. I just have to give him one of those looks. Tell his mama, oh, and she will take care of it.
Now, see, you done triggered me. You done give me all kind of flashbacks. Thinking back to looks, thinking back to, you know, just motions, and thinking back to, you know, that old school punishment that used to go around. I'm not going to talk about it because it's illegal now. But you know, I think we see, we didn't. Hey, Irene, yeah, we didn't have no number to call back.
Well,
then.
We didn't have Alvin Poussant, okay, in the Cosby Show, okay. We didn't have it. But you know, Emmett, this is what I like. We don't show the precociousness of our children, yes. and even representationally. And I just want to say this. You know, when I was growing up, okay, don't any of y'all say anything. But there was. There was Dennis the Menace, right? Leave It to Beaver, this precocious little boy. But when we have precocious kid, it follows this racial trope of the clown. For example, Gary Coleman in Family Matters. I love Steve Urkel, but again, he was different strokes, Coleman was, but different, Family Matters with Steve Urkel. The first time we get an inkling of a precocious kid is with Raven Simone as Olivia on the Cosby Show. So that's the thing, even the representation of our children, even when they're trying to not demonize us or problematize us, it becomes a problem nonetheless.
Well, I am telling you, there's so much that we can uncover here. Let's take a break and come back on the other side. This is the All Revved Up Podcast. We'll be right back.
Now, when you get pulled over...
Mom, I'm a good driver. Okay?
Baby.
Don't worry.
This is not about you getting a ticket. This is about you not coming home.
I'm gonna be okay. Right?
This is the All Revved Up Podcast. We're back. And that was a Procter & Gamble commercial from 2017 entitled The Talk, directed by Malik Vital. Irene, The Talk, what does that mean?
Oh, my God. That it becomes a rite of passage. You can't be Black in America as a child and not have the talk. Because as the mother said, she said, it's not about you can't drive or getting a ticket. It's about policing in America and about, I want you to come home. It says you are a threat. Driving while Black, you know, shopping while Black, bird watching while Black. And I tell you something about that. It pulls at my heartstring because when you have to do that, and I've had to do that with a number of kids here, and then if they're LGBTQIA and then some, it's an added burden on that. You know, how do you tell them, okay, you're gay, you're non-gender conforming, okay, they see a Black dude here, you're in a car. I have to deal with that even with my spouse. So the talk in many ways is one of our ways of trying to make them safe, even though we know we really can't, okay? Because we're not with them at that moment. And it humbles you. I'm telling you, let me tell you, this is how I felt. Every day the child came back home, I said, Jesus answered my prayers. Because when they leave home, there's no guarantee that they'll come back. And that was Sandra Bland. You know, I mean, we can go down the list. Tamir yeah. Rice. I mean, we can go, okay, Trayvon. We can just go down the list. That's an existential threat on our family.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is interesting to me. I have an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old. And for so long, the talk was actually supposed to be about the birds and the bees, like giving children the talk, right? And that's, you know, people debate when you're supposed to do that and when you're ready, you know. But the first talk I had with my kids was when they were five. Ooh. And both of them, they're two years and 23 days apart, both March babies. But when they were five, each individually, they were both called the N-word at school.
Are you serious?
So that initiated the first talk when I had to help them to process that was a bad thing, and that we don't allow anyone to call us the N-word. Now, I couldn't really go too much more historically around that, but that this is a no-no, right? And then you move into the realm of, you know, once they start going to middle school and kids have access to social media and cell phones and all this kind of other stuff going on, where you're seeing the maiming, the torturing, and the modern day lynching of Black people on phones, right. Then we had to have that second talk.
That's
so
right.
So what's interesting to me is that for my generation, the talk was about birds and the bees. And now that's the third talk that I've given my children about the birds and the bees. And I mean, this is crazy.
Absolutely. You know, the interesting thing, we once had the province of the talk. OK, Black folks have the talk. But now with Asian American Pacific Island bigotry, now they're talking about the talk here. I think the thing that what people don't really understand is that the harm that racism do to our children, the sort of physiological and psychological impact on race of racism on our kids, and how it stymies their intellectual and social growth and a feeling of safety. And that's one of the sort of key elements that you want children to have, to feel safe. And as parents, when you feel you can't keep them safe, you can't be sure that child won't come home, you know, it really takes something out of you. It really does. And I mean, this is why I always say you got to have that walk with Jesus, because honestly, that's one of those moments that I'm telling you, when they turn the key, you say, oh my God, thank you. And I'm going to tell you another scary moment is when they say, I want a driver's license. I want to get a learner's permit, you know, and you don't listen. Any parent is worried about that. And just in general, okay? At this point, you don't care if they bang up the car. You really don't. You just want them to get out of the car and walk into the house. I mean, it's really gotten to that sort of level here. But, you know, it does something in terms of how you have to censor your children to teach them to censor themselves.
I mean, we're asking our young people to mature, prematurely. Which is interesting, because I remember, the first car I had was a 78 Cadillac Seville, two-tone brown, four-door, and it had a sunroof, and my father helped me to get it, right? I basically had to buy it from my father, who helped me to get it. And the biggest issue with that car was that I didn't want to bang it up.
Right, and
so I was very sensitive about that, and you certainly didn't let anyone else drive my car. But now it's like, you know, the biggest issue is about being pulled over by the police. Mm-hmm, and the whole, you know, part of that talk is that if the police start following you, to the extent that you can, go to a well-lit public place, mm-hmm, right? I mean, mm-hmm, you know, the old adage, mm-hmm, is don't ever allow the police to follow you home. Right. And you know, so, mm-hmm, and so in that challenge, there's also another piece that when our children are infants and coming up in that early year as toddlers, we are the divine to them, right? Before we're able to introduce them to the divine, we are the divine. And then as they age and become teenagers and you know, become young adults, then it's all of a sudden like we no longer have that power. And literally don't have the authority over their lives. And it's hard on both the young people, but also on the parents.
Absolutely. Right? But the reason why we constantly have to have the talk, and I'll tell you, you didn't have to have it as much. And you're absolutely right, because certainly my generation, I had the talk, but not as frequently as every time there's an incident of a child being killed or stopped by the police. We're constantly having this talk. But part of that has that I grew up more in segregated Brooklyn. So we knew the sort of line of demarcation of like, okay, if you go over to Canarsie, you got some problems here. You go over to Flatbush, now all that. But that now we supposedly equalizing space, but still it's still white space. You know, again, we're trespassing, okay? And not knowingly. And so it pulls at you in terms of, well, where is the line? Okay, where are we not supposed to be? Although they're saying, you know, we want a more integrated society. So one of the things that, you know, this is what I felt, you know, raising one of my boys, I said this and he looked at me like I was crazy. I said, listen, I'll wait in the car. You just go do you and go to the party or whatever. You don't even have to say I'm in the car, but I would prefer, and you could stay as long as you want because I got books on tape. Don't even worry about it. I can listen to some Toni Morrison.
Hold on. Okay? Hold on. Irene, You didn't send the boy into the party and sit outside in the car, did you?
No, I mean, he's not going to let me do that. But I said that I was trying to like give him some money. Like, listen, because the point is, look, sundown. Let's talk about this.
We
live in a sundown nation, not just town. Yeah. Okay. And I'm in liberal Cambridge. If they're going to stop, you know, Professor Henry Gates in the in daytime going into his house. You know, parties don't start until 10, 11 o'clock. They don't come home until 2 o'clock in the morning. What are you doing with this fine-looking car? Or any car?
I know for sure that my parents are praying people because, I grew up in Los Angeles. As much as, folks were concerned about the Bloods and the Crips and all the other gangs that were, around in my day, we were concerned about the LAPD. Which was the worst gang in Los Angeles. And so, to think about the times when I may have missed curfew by a couple of minutes, times 10, when I may have been out a little late and not necessarily been where I was supposed to be. I think about it now as a parent of two teenagers. I'm like, boys, I'm pulling that look.
But it's the same with girls, though. It's the same with girls, because this is what I do. Because I get a lot of LGBTQ kids, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm mama. Now, if it's my spouse's nieces and nephews, I'm auntie. But the thing is that I am a little, it makes you hypersensitive. Because I do this. When you leave, text me. Now, you know I'm timing it. I'm not timing it because I don't trust that you're going to come home. But if you're not here within a certain time, the real thing is you really can't even call the police because it suggests that the police has called them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Has stopped them. And so you worry and you figure, tell me what route you're taking. So that's why and although we can now do that with these smartphones, if they're stopped, then that's not a stoplight. You can look now where they are. You can't help but think that that's the police.
Yeah, I mean you're so right. I mean, we taught our kids from a very early age that no matter what it is, if there's trouble to be had, whether you got into it or it got into you, tell us first so that we can be part of your team and advocating for you, and we'll take care of what needs to be taken care of once we get home.
But the goal
is to get you home.
Right, and I know you taught them put your hands.
That's right. Okay. 10 and 2.
Okay.
10 and 2.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Be polite. I mean, and you know, you have to swallow a lot of pride.
Yeah.
Because they're the thugs. Okay. They're the gangster. Okay. Yeah. You got to say, now, listen, my license or registration is in the, may I?
Yeah.
Okay. Even me thinking, may I go into the glove compartment? I'll keep my hands up. Okay. Yeah. Or because if you say, well, why don't you go get it? That sets
it
off.
And don't forget, sir or ma'am.
Okay. 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 Now, how is that any different than slavery? How is that any different? Okay. Because it's policing.
I'm just going to end us right now because you didn't invoke slavery. And that's a whole nother episode. And I think we need to get to that at some point. But let me leave our listeners with these closing words. There was a time where respect was earned and elders mattered. Where the safety of a barbershop or beauty salon meant a Saturday was spent with others. Where church was a weekly family reunion with chosen family, not to replace the annual big meeting with kinfolk. Where children were allowed to be innocent, naive, and childish, while under the care of the entire neighborhood. Where aunts and uncles extended beyond bloodline, and cousin was a nickname for a play sister or play brother. Where the outdoor lamppost was the keeper of the evening curfew. Where you either stayed outdoors or indoors, but no going back and forth. Where friends were invited to the dinner table, no matter if you had food or not. I remember the days of old, and oh, how I wish that my children could have experienced the same. Unfortunately, things have changed. However, no matter how much they have changed, what has not changed is the absolute joy of nurturing and loving these young leaders of the future. What a blessing and a privilege to usher into adulthood the young progeny of our ancestors whose legacies live on through the youth who call their names. Young people, be bold, be courageous, and keep it real. Young people, be brilliant, be innovative, and keep the entrepreneurial spirit alive. Young people, you are loved, you are appreciated, you are valued, and your lives matter.
Amen.
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 And Ashe.
Ashe.
All Revved Up is brought to you by us, the Revs. Our amazing producers are Kyla Wright and Kevante Smalls.
Music from this episode is from Reverend Price's son, musical prodigy, Emmett G. Price IV. All Revved Up is distributed by GBH.
Additional thanks to Bob Kempf, Elizabeth O'Brien, May He, Chelsea Mers, Meredith Neerman, and Zach Waldman.
If you like what you hear, let us know. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts and follow us at All Revved Up Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
And feel free to send us a note, a question, or a comment at allrevveduppod@gmail.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks for another episode of All Revved Up.